Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, April 5th, 2021, and this is episode 219 of The TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today, as always, it's Eric Nathanson. What's up, man?
It's hot here. Isn't it hot by you?
Is it hot, really?
Yes.
Yeah, no, like it's actually... Oh, yeah. Well, there you go with Vegas. No, it's like going to be 68 today. It got up to 88 last week or so. It was nice. It was a nice preview of summer. But when the AC kicked on, then my wallet was like, no more AC.
Yeah, we got the
it's AC too early. It's just the beginning of April. No, man. But yeah, I know you got a lot more coming that your way in Vegas. Willie should be joining us at some point today. He does have some tree trimmers in his neighborhood, so it's too loud for him to broadcast right now. So if he joins, he joins. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But hopefully he'll be on for many more TortureCasts this year. We are currently streaming live on Facebook, and we're normally going to be doing this like we have been through spring, and typically every Monday around 12:15 Pacific. Next week, there will be another exception to that, as I have some work stuff. I'm going to be scuba diving next week, but we'll let you know on our Facebook and Twitter when we'll record next week. But, Eric, this is our first regular season podcast, huh? We can actually talk about real baseball. It may not be the best news in the world, but at least we're talking baseball.
I can't believe it's April. You were reading, you were talking to start this. You're like, it's April 5th. And I'm like, wow, how the did it get to be April 5th already? Like, I don't know if it was spring training and being interested in it, but like this March, past March, went by a whole lot faster than 2020 March. And I think baseball had a huge part to do with it. And it was just so nice to have the Giants on a regular basis again, become part of the rhythm of the day. You know, life, just everything seems normal when the Giants are the part of the rhythm of the day. And opening day was fun because it was opening day and it was, for the most part, a fun game. And then things happen, but we'll get into that in a minute. So I'm just happy baseball is back. It's really kind of the thing we've been missing from our everyday lives. And now that we have some fun stuff to talk about.
How did you watch the first game? Oh, actually, that's right. That's a good story, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. We'll catch up with that and how you viewed that game, because I do remember now how that all went down. All right, so let's just get right into it. The Giants opened up with 3 in Seattle, one of the few interleague series that might have had something to do with the fact that they only had 3 games. There were a lot of other 4-game series. But regardless of that, they had a very weird off day yesterday on a Sunday, Easter. And there were other series that had off days, like on Friday. They started on Thursday, then they went Saturday and Sunday. Kind of strange. But they did drop 2 out of 3 in Seattle, but it really was the pivotal game one that decided who's going to win this series. Otherwise, the Giants would have taken 2 out of 3, and everybody would have been like, hey, the Giants are on their way. They won their first series, right? It's amazing how baseball is literally a game of inches, and just one bad game can kind of flip the script on the entire, you know, opening weekend. It was frustrating. It was very frustrating. And so I guess to spoil it, Eric actually didn't see the meltdown occur live. To be honest, I think that's kind of a cool way to have that happen, to be honest.
I went to bed. It was 5-0, man. I fell asleep. I was beat. I had a long day. I watched a lot of baseball, not gonna lie. I watched a lot of baseball and it finally caught up to me. And it was 5-0, and I swear, I literally said to the wife, I'm like, they can't blow this. I'm like, this bullpen's too good. I'm just going to, you know, steer into it and fall asleep, and I'm okay with that. It was the 7th inning. I mean, it was 5-0 going to the bottom of the 7th. I think that's when the Mariners scored their first run, with the bottom of the 7th, and right. I didn't even see it. And so I woke up, you know, and I kind of rolled out of bed early in the morning. And I looked at my phone. And I'm like, wait, what?
You must have had a second look. Like, did they play doubleheader? Was this another game or something like that?
I mean, did think that. I looked at the wrong thing. I was like, how in the world did they let up 7 runs in 3? And then I found 4 innings.
Right.
You know, but how could such a thing happen? And it was just, it's so funny because I would have been mad. I would have been yelling. I would have been waking people up in the house when they were blowing it late in the game. And instead, I watched it by myself as dawn was breaking the next morning. And I got to just soak it in instead of, you know, dealing with the emotions of the roller coaster of the game. How did you view opening day? Where were you to watch this fiasco?
So I watched the entire thing live. You know, I would always step out every other inning or so and miss a couple pitches, you know, just to go talk with the family or do whatever. But they knew it was opening day and they were like, okay, Dad, go watch your baseball game. I had it on during dinner too, and they were watching a little bit of it, but they don't, to be honest, they don't really care. They care for me. They say, Dad, did the Giants lose? You know, that kind of thing. I was watching it live, and you know, like you said, when they were up 5-0, I was feeling good, feeling real good. Thinking, okay, we got just a few more innings to go. And then it was 5-1, no big deal. You know, you can't expect a shutout. Then they tacked on another one, 6-1. You're going into the eighth inning, you know? And there was a moment like when Gausman was Gausman, sorry, I always mispronounce his name. I always want to say like Gauss, or you know, it's supposed to be Gauss. I always say Gauss. I don't know why. It's like German or something, but it's Gausman. I always go Gaussman. Like he's some, you know,
I'll get
scientist.
Better at that. I say Gausman.
Yeah, but it's apparently Gausman. Anyway, he was at 90 pitches in the bottom of the 7th, and he was taken out. And, you know, it was one of those things where he was at 90 pitches. He had one out to go. And it was a lefty. Kapler took him out. I thought that was an odd call. You know, it's not that big of a deal. But, and you know, he walked a guy and then ended up getting the next guy out. So it wasn't the end of the world. So there was no real damage done by that. It was just an odd thing. Now, I know a lot of people out there were like, why didn't Gausman go 8 innings? He could have gone a complete game and this wouldn't have happened. It's like, no. I mean, come on. It's 90 pitches. He probably would, you know, been at 95 going to the next inning. You can't expect a guy in the very first start of the season to go 110. I mean, that's just not going to happen, guys. So I'm not blaming Kapler for that part. Unfortunately, you're strapped with the new rule from last year, which is, you know, minimum 3 batters per pitcher. And I feel for Kapler and any other manager in that situation, because there are times where I think the manager and the pitching coach and really everyone watching on TV, you know that this pitcher doesn't have it tonight for whatever reason. And I think a lot of it, what happened on opening night was just nerves, was just adrenaline. Yeah. Because the primary problem the Giants pitchers had wasn't contact, it was just location. They were walking everybody. They were walking everybody left and right. And, you know, they weren't hit that hard, to be honest. I mean, it was just too many base runners from the walk. You throw in an error there from Brandon Belt, who uncharacteristically launched it, you know, past Crawford, which could have been a double play, but certainly would have been that one out, would have prevented 1 or 2 runs. So, you know, you just had a collision of all these factors coming together. And the fact that Kapler couldn't do anything about it after 3 batters, that's when he could make his moves. And it didn't matter what button he pushed, right? Every button he pushed was just imploded on him. And it's frustrating in the moment, and you kind of want to blame the manager. But when you step back and kind of look at it analytically, it's hard because Kapler has the reputation of not knowing how to handle a bullpen. So I think the preconceived notions are already there. And you think, oh, Bochy knows how to manage a bullpen. It's like, well, true, but he also didn't have the 3-batter minimum rule. That's and Kapler fair. Stepped into this. And it's the first game of the season. I mean, I want to ask any fans out there who blamed Kapler for this loss, what would you have done differently? You know, I mean, Gausman couldn't go that long. Let's just remove that from the equation. So then you got to go, okay, what could he have done differently? He couldn't control the error by Belt, right? No matter who he put in, they just walked the crap out of everyone. Yeah. So the only thing I could see is maybe putting in, you know, the closer an inning earlier, you know, something like that. But then again, why? You know, it's the first game of the season. This isn't game 162. You're not battling for a playoff spot. This is like, you got to go in and realize that this is a marathon. And it sucked. Well, there you go. Let McGee pitch longer. Yeah, but the implosion happened before McGee entered the game.
Yeah,
So
no, the
that's
implosion
primarily, I'm
is.
referring to the eighth inning.
Yeah, the implosion is the eighth inning, and this is actually where I do come in some criticism of Kapler. I thought Whistler was fine. When Whistler's third batter got a base hit to center field to drive and run, it was like some broken bat little doink. It was not hard contact. And he had settled in, his sliders were getting over the plate. But after that batter, Kapler went out, played matchups, played percentages, played whatever the book told him to play ahead of time. And he went from Whistler to Yarlín García. And I think that's where the biggest mistake came in. He could have stayed with Whistler and given him a shot to get out of that inning. I think that's where Kepler's lack of game flow, lack of seeing the moment that's in front of him, comes back to bite him a little bit. And so while I agree the analytics say that he should have done this, my eyes told me Whistler looked fine. When I watched it back and I was like, oh, well, that was nothing. Oh, okay, that was just weak contact. You know, he still has a double play in order right now. And that's all I was thinking about was Whistler had an opportunity, a double play opportunity. They still had a 6-2 lead after the first run that he gave up. So they were still within reach. But then, like you said, Yarlín García came in and just flat out failed. And Tyler Rogers came in, and I don't want to say he failed, but guys were sitting on his pitches. The hit he gave up, the guy was just absolutely waiting on the pitch that he hit. And so it was just a frustrating way to lose. And I can't say that all of the decisions that Kapler made led to it, but the bullpen sure did not help him out.
No, and Whistler, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you. I think Kapler could have let him in or let him pitch to at least one more batter just to see if he could get out of the situation. But he did. I mean, I know it wasn't super hard contact, but two hits and a walk, you know, and he didn't retire a batter. So it wasn't like, you know, it's like, oh, he's doing great. It's like, yeah, I know it wasn't the strongest contact, but at the same time, you know, I think he's going, okay, three batters got on base. You know, let's try someone else.
Yeah,
And he
but
went to
it's
Garcia.
but you
I
have
know
to
what you're
wonder.
saying about the eye test, about him locating
Yeah.
and all that stuff. I get that
Well,
part.
I
And
wonder
he
if the
threw
three
14
batter
pitches.
minimum, do you think the three batter minimum came into play here? Do you think once a batter gets to three bat once a pitcher gets to three batters, now they're inclined to necessarily change? Do you think that that has anything to do with it? Because it's frustrating to think that Kapler's like, all right, we got him through the three batters. Now I can go make a move instead of taking in the moment and seeing that it was just some weak, you know, contact.
Yeah, I mean it's really possible. I just watching this implosion and just knowing I've always hated the rule, I can't stand the three batter rule. I just think it's
Oh,
an
yeah.
artificial construct, and I
Sure.
understand it's supposed to shorten games and all that stuff, but now managers are forced to do this and it
Yeah, it
sucks, and I
lengthened the
don't like
game.
it. What's that?
It
Oh, it
lengthened the
lengthened the game.
game.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It definitely can lengthen the game, ironically, because if you get throw a guy out there and you know he doesn't have the stuff, but you got to leave him in for three batters and he walks all
Right.
three, that's lengthening the game. It's totally true.
I mean, when
Oh my
Yarlín
God.
García came in, and what did he do? He walked two guys, didn't he? Yeah, Yarlín
Yeah, he
García
walked
walked,
two.
and he only got one out, and he gave up two runs. I mean,
Yeah, he
I
struck out
get that
one,
the
walked two. Then
yeah, I
Tyler
get that.
came in and gave up the double right away. And
Yeah.
then you had the ground ball by Belt, and he muffed that. So I'm not going to pin it on Rogers either. He gave up one hit, got two outs.
No.
And then McGee had a clean ninth, of course. And then Dickerson came up and obviously gave us a little bit of hope with the game tying solo shot in the ninth. And then Jose Alvarez, you know, look, he's a pro. This is his 10th season, right? He's had some very, very good, solid years. And so, again, I think I'm going to chalk this one up to just nerves. He's coming out in the 10th inning to tie game. And you start with, again, another dumb rule. I hate it. Runner on second, right? So he crapped the bed, man. And there's no other way to
He
put it.
did.
I mean, he just was like, it reminded me of the Bugs Bunny cartoon, you know, the baseball. Dun, 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 walk. Dun, 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 walk. So, yeah, he walked three guys in a row, walked in the run. I mean, the Mariners didn't need to do anything except just look at pitches and not swing. I mean, you and I could have been credited with game-winning RBI.
I wonder if that's the first time that's happened since this rule got instituted, where a guy came in and just immediately walked three guys. Like, didn't get an out, really didn't retire better. I mean, he just immediately walked three guys. And he wasn't even close.
He wasn't even close.
It was so frustrating. Once he was on the second batter, you're like, damn it, they have to keep this guy in for another batter. Like,
16 pitches, 4 were strikes.
Oh. That's, I mean, I'm with good. You. I'm with you. Nerves play part. You know, these guys are human. They are playing a game, and they do have their own emotions that run through their body, and adrenaline's a funny, funny thing sometimes. And if you can't find, as a pitcher, if you can't find your release point, then you're screwed. And it seemed like Alvarez didn't know where the ball was going at all. And you do. You just chalk it up to nerves. And sorry, bud, that sucks. You know, and it sucks that he was put in that position. Because who knows? Maybe if he had loaded the bases with walks, they could have gotten a double play, like get somebody to play, you know, like a 1-2-3 double play or something like that. And they could have gotten out of the inning. But because, like you said, they had that stupid rule. You know, both those stupid rules burned the Giants and the home opener, the three batter and the guy on second base. And it's a shame, but that's baseball in 2020, and we just got to take it.
Well, that's the bad news out of the way. But the good news was, my God, the Giants power surge, hitting 4 home runs. And I'm going to have 3 consecutive home run calls because, you know, chicks dig the long ball, right? So here we go. Here was the first one.
Posey, Buster Posey. Who's hitting 7th. The numbers from the 2019 season. Buster hits a high drive to left. It is out of here. Wow, maybe he's not happy hitting 7th.
Well, he just got an RBI, knocked himself in.
And it's 2-0.
Well, they tried to go in a third time. They missed twice with fastballs on the inside corner. They tried to go back in there again, and... You see,
look at the location of this pitch.
Yeah. Just a little bit of a,
I mean, I'll be honest with you. That's a pitch that I'm getting way up on the fists and grounding out to third on, you know?
Signature swing has always been.
No, it was beautiful.
He pulled his hands in, and it's fine because when Buster's going good, he goes to the right side. So it actually is a great sign to see him pulling the ball like that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. And, where's my other button here? Apologies for the technical issue real quick. Things are moving around here. So then we had, of course, old man Evan Longoria, who also is experiencing a bit of a power surge as well. And I have him here. Oops, I think I didn't keep the audio. Oh, no, this is Dickerson. My apologies. So for those on the audio podcast, if you ever want to check us out on Facebook, we'll be going live. Every Monday, we do play these videos from time to time, so please understand I am trying to get this up right now. Sometimes things don't always cooperate. I got multiple things to click.
Technology, it saves us, but it also...
It's very true, isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
We wouldn't be able to do this with...
Yeah, that tab disappeared on me, so I'm just going to go ahead and not play that right now. That's all right. We'll get back to it. So anyway, Longo, of course, went deep, and then Alex Dickerson in the 9th inning, of course, tied it up. And then Austin Slater mixed in a home run there as well. So you had 4 home runs right off the bat for the Giants. So that was kind of the good news going in. So position-wise, hitting-wise, Giants were on track. Game number two, Giants actually did bounce back, which is nice to see. You know, they didn't let... The night before, you know, I've been watching Ted Lasso recently, and there's this great part where one of the football players on his team is really bummed about how he played, and he goes up to him and he's like, "Are you familiar with the goldfish?" And he's like, "No, what are you talking about? The goldfish has a memory of 10 minutes. Be more like a goldfish." And it's true. It's like you just gotta forget, you know, the previous night, the previous at bat, the error you make. The bullpen implosion. You got 161 more games. And so they did. They did very nicely. Obviously, Cueto pitched adequately enough to keep them in the game. Their offense was solid once again. And they ended up, taking that one 6-3. And the bullpen actually shut it down. No runs after Cueto exited the game. So I don't know, what kind of thoughts did you have from that game? It was really, really good to see that.
I thought adequate is a great description of how John Cueto pitched. He lost it there for a couple innings. Yeah, that's all he was. He lost it for a couple innings, and he didn't know where the ball was going. And then he recovered. And I was a little surprised to see him get sent out for another inning, and then he got the ground ball double play, and he actually looked in control at that point. So, again, I was surprised that Cap didn't just leave him out there for another batter, but apparently the plan was to get – who did he bring in there? Peralta in a situation like that. So he brought him in. But it's great to see the offense clicking. This is what it is. This is what's going to win them ball games, is this offense. And when you see guys like Longo, I think he went the other way again, and Posey was able to hit a homer. Posey's swing looks beautiful. I was complaining that he looked like he had no lower body left, and his lower body has been in these swings. It's
probably has a pretty good idea of what he wants to do.
Devil.
And that swing at the first pitch as he drives this one to center field and out of here. I think he's got a pretty good idea of what he wants to do. And that's lay on that first
Brooks,
pitch.
You're right. No player's hit more home runs than Buster Posey this season.
He knows what he's got a good swing going.
Technically
he had
correct,
one going
I guess.
In last night's ball game, came to the ballpark today and says, I want in.
There he does.
And he hasn't even played all the games. Yeah, Posey, you can see his swing. Yeah, you can see his swing now with his whole, his bottom half is staying planted as his top half torques. It's beautiful.
I hope
to watch.
It stays there. I really hope it stays there, you know.
Well, the curiosity is, I'm curious to see how much he plays. Like, I'm curious to see, they had a day off yesterday, so I'm curious to see if Posey plays tonight or if they throw in Casale against the lefty.
Right. And then Evan Longoria, of course, I missed his game one home run. Here's his game two home run.
Fastball
sorry, this is Solano.
Fair ball down the left field line.
Wrong tab.
And it kicks away
this
from
a 3-3 tie.
One run scores. Yastrzemski coming in. He's going to score. And Donnie Barrels does it again.
Three hit night for Donovan Solano. And
that's my batting champ.
Right. I think Giants fans were excited to see Solano step into that opportunity. And boy, did he capitalize.
They tried to sneak a fastball in.
Well, they're inside. Look at
that.
That's boom.
Not
just
a bad
those
pitch.
Hands.
I mean, that's mid-90s plus with two-seam movement on the hands, and he just simply digs it out.
Yeah, that was a beautiful, beautiful piece of hitting by Donnie.
He's figured something out. He can get to the pitch. I mean, he gets base hits on those low and away pitches too, and he just has amazing bat control. It's like if Pablo was shorter and skinnier and younger.
And younger and more athletic. And, never mind. Speaking of Pablo, by the way, he comes up and he hits a two-run home run pinch hitting in the Braves' first game. So that was good for him. All right, I keep neglecting Longo. Here's his second home run of the year.
Longoria hits a high drive to right. It is out of here. And this game is tied. He hits his second of the season.
So it's great to see about this is Longo had a hot spring, and it's continuing right into the regular season.
His swing was all
this is the Longo we've all been waiting for. Granted, this could all tail off.
Consistently
he just has a crappy season.
Was use the field with power.
It's great to see him start
foul
like this.
Line to foul line. Here they try
I forgot where I heard it.
Fastball at 95.
Some scout or something he just Longo looks 5 years younger.
What was that?
He can hit. Longo looks 5 years younger, according to some scouts I was reading about. And so if he can keep this production up. Hearing Kipko, it's a high drive to right. That's what we want out of Longo this year.
Yeah, Oppo, baby, for sure. And by the way, it's got to be awkward for them. I mean, I'm sure they're happy to be broadcasting games again, but they're broadcasting from Oracle Park, and they're watching TVs, kind of like we are. It's an odd way to watch a game. Hey, by the way, they missed the cameraman missed that one home run. Who was it that hit it? Was it Slater's home run, I think and the camera was like bouncing all around. They didn't cut to the right camera. The camera couldn't track the ball. And you could just hear Kite hanging in the breeze, man. He was like, and yep, it's out of here. as he saw Slater, the camera picks him up starting around the bases and the home run, or the umpire is signaling home run. I feel bad for him.
Right. I mean, that's got to be tough. The whole, I got to be honest, I've never been critical of NBC Sports' broadcasts of the Giants games. But, like, the first few games, there were a lot of glitches going on. It seemed like they had a lot of stuff to work out. You know, probably chalk it up to COVID times, but it seems like stuff like that happened more than one time. It was kind of funny.
Brooks is recalling it was Longo's. Yeah, I couldn't remember which one it was. Yeah, because some of the highlights I had, I think I had both Longo's, though, actually. So anyway, yeah, they cap out game two, 6-3, and you're thinking, man, they should have won the first two games of this series. But alas, they tied it up. They had the rubber game on Saturday, and unfortunately, just the offense was not there. It just wasn't there. They got blanked 4-0. Logan Webb was not horrible. He was okay. He kept him in the game, per se. Three earned runs and 5 1/3. You know, he had a 0.53 ERA for the spring. We know that that wasn't going to continue, but he looked really, really dominant, and that was really promising to see. So I actually ended up picking him up on my fantasy team near the end. No one was picking him up, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to take a flyer on him just to see how, you know, he does. He's young, but, you know, with that new changeup he has that's been dominating in spring, I figured, it's worth it, you know?
I mean, he still got 5 strikeouts and 5 1/3 innings. He did give up 7 hits, but another stat I saw was he had, I believe it was 10 swings and misses, like third most in his career for any game, and he only threw 5 1/3 in this one. But 3 walks was a problem, and he just seemed to have location issues. And it was one of those starts where he did keep the team in the game, but Kikuchi of the Mariners turned out to be this like wonder pitcher. Like they were talking about it on the broadcast, like he was throwing mid to low 90s during spring training, and all of a sudden this guy comes out blowing like 97, and the Giants hitters looked like they did not know what hit them. They just didn't see what was coming. And you could tell early on it was just one of those games where it was going to be a struggle for the Giants to score runs. And they did. And that's, you know, going to happen when most of your offense is home runs, like it has been for the Giants so far.
Yeah, in fact, they interviewed Webb after the game. And he says, quote, "I feel like most teams are probably going to be looking for that pitch." And he's referencing the changeup. "I've just got to execute better. Those 3 straight doubles. The Trammell one wasn't too bad, but the other ones, I can't leave them up that far. When you get to 2 strikes and you leave a pitch kind of middle, it's frustrating. It's something I'll work on." Out of his 97 pitches, 35 were changeups, and that's the third most he's thrown in any of his 22 career big league appearances. And he says, quote, "I'm going to keep throwing it. Now it just comes down to executing that pitch. I feel like I do have pretty good control of that pitch right now. I think I got just a little too happy with it." That's an interesting word. "The second time through the lineup, maybe I'll mix in a different pitch, but it doesn't necessarily shake my confidence in that pitch. I'm going to keep throwing it. I'm excited to keep throwing it."
Yeah, it sounds like he still has all the confidence in his changeup. When he says he got a little happy with it, you only get happy with a pitch when you feel like it's clicking. And so, you know, I mean, for first outing after a spring like that, it was definitely below expectations, but personally, it does not hamper my expectations of Logan Webb going forward. I mean, do you think that this is any indication of what he's going to be this season, or do you think he'll continue what he showed us during the spring?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think during last week's season preview, I was, you know, hoping for like a 4.5 ERA for the year for him, something like that. Didn't you predict him to be the ERA champ for the team, or am I mistaken on that one?
No, I believe so.
Yeah, I think
I'm high on Logan Webb. I also have the utmost confidence in his changeup like he does. I'm looking now to see if I can see it. I also have the, I said Webb at 3.5. I also have the utmost confidence in his changeup, and I think he'll be fine. He's still learning. So there's going to be flashes of brilliance, and there's going to be other things. And Brooks honestly just made another good point. Webb was pitching to Casale, and we haven't seen him pitch to Posey yet.
Yeah.
So you got to wonder how he does with Posey back there behind the plate steering the ship.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, Buster's going to be catching probably 3.5 out of 5 games this year, 7 out of 10, something like that. So, you know, you're going to have spot starts that just, you know, the pitcher's going to miss that. And obviously Cueto had a hard time with Bart last year. He definitely wants to be with Posey all the time. They didn't have Posey at all last year. But, you know, Flexen is a righty, and in that last game, you know, I just couldn't do anything against him.
Damn it, man.
Yeah, you were on the wrong game. That's all right.
Damn.
I didn't want to point that out right away. But but Flexen is a righty in that last game. And last year, the Giants had – their OPS was much worse against righties. They hit lefties much, much better, which generally we thought was going to be good in the NL West because of how many lefties are stacked in the NL West. But they really struck out against righties, and it's funny that, you know, they hit the crap out of the ball the first two games against lefties, and then they come in against the righty and the righty reliever and just couldn't do squat. Microcosm, small sample size, and I think they stacked the lineup with four or five lefties, but, you know, Farhan even said in spring training after they got LaStella that he thought they were still one left-handed bat short. And this is why. This is what one of the weaknesses that they were trying to address. And so we'll see how the season bears out. But you're going to see teams that they all know this, right? They scout all the teams. They know how they do against lefties, righties, changeups, curveballs, whatever. So you might see some teams line up some of their starters to throw in an extra righty here or there throughout, you know, any given week. So we'll see. But, yeah, 0-for-1 against righties.
Yeah, well, it's funny.
Haven't even scored a run.
You mentioned that they are good against lefties, and they'll be facing lefties in two of the three games against the Padres coming up this week. You got Morjon and Snell. I think that's how you say Morjon, Morjon. I know it looks like Morjon, but, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, and Snell. So you kind of hope that this, you know, experiment of platooning, because that's what this is this year. This experiment of platooning is, you know, it works out in that way.
Yeah, my favorite player name, though, to say over the weekend was the Mariners' Marmalejos. I love that name.
That's an 80-grade name. That is a great name.
Marmalejos.
It sounds like something you spread over your toast in the morning.
Yeah, a little
like,
orange, I'm just gonna have orange a little Marmalejos.
Toast. Right. Okay, I'm not the only one. I think of marmalade. I totally do.
Oh, that's too funny. I love it.
That is.
Oh, man. Yeah, we got some banter here going on. Buster increased his trade value, and Buster won't be traded.
Stop.
Yeah,
we
hit some nerves last week, too, talking about that, huh?
Just a hypothetical I threw out there. I mean, I'll stand behind the take. I think it's beneficial for the team, but stop. Let the season play out. We're three games in.
I can't, what?
That's what many people say about, Buster being traded. Oh, man. All right, so... I was Willie. Oh, hey, Willie Dills. There we go. All right, one Willie Dills is joining us right now.
What's up, guys? Can you hear me?
Hey, how you doing, Willie?
Good. It looks like you can't see me, though.
Nope. Yeah, I see you in the
preview.
Oh, there you go. I saw you in the preview, but you weren't coming up in the main screen. But there you are. So the tree trimmers are done?
Yeah, it always used to mess with me on the Angry Chicken that Tuesdays they would cut the lawn and they had these little, you know, it's like one of those little sit on John Deere's or whatever. And the dude would ride around for like 35 minutes right at showtime. And it hasn't been a problem for so long, but today apparently they're knocking down like six or seven trees that are right between me and the road. So they've been real loud all day, but they just stopped so I can actually talk into a microphone.
Nice. Well, thanks for coming on, man.
Well, Willie, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Willie, we just wrapped up talking about the opening series. So what are your thoughts coming away from the opening series? Where are you at? What did you see?
Well, coming away from the opening series, I definitely felt like we saw what I expected to see as far as our strengths and weaknesses. Like, you know, the game we lost 8-7. It was funny, like I was, you know, on the last show, I said, we're going to see a lot of losses 8-7 and wins 8-7. And when, what was funny is there was a point there where it was 7-7 and I was like, hey, we could be the eight, but you know, no, that didn't work out that way. And then the game we won looked kind of like, okay, yeah, if we get a good start and a little bit of power and we don't have to go to the bullpen for 4+ innings, then we're golden. Right. And that game worked out that way. And then we lost to, you know, a right-handed pitcher horribly, right? Which is like, what I expected to happen.
And so that's exactly, like, that was our last thing we just mentioned, was struggling against righties and 0-for-1 against righties to start the season.
It was like we just watched basically a 162 game season play out in 3 games, and I'm not happy about that. Like, I was like, surprise me, guys. Okay, Buster Posey hit 2 home runs. That was a big surprise. And that was a welcome one. But, yeah, so, you know, and the problem is that's the Mariners. Today is the Padres. We're definitely not going to get away with anything against the Padres. So, you know, if they can kind of tighten the screws. What I really am hoping for is we need to just start making general movement towards having a better bullpen and better pitchers in general. I feel like the position players – feel fairly solid and feel like kind of what I think they're a known quantity, but man,
yeah,
our bullpen looked like trash in that first game, and I was so sad. And I'm like, you know, we can't take them out until 3 batters, right? So
yeah,
if a guy comes out there and gets shelled in the first 2 batters, he's got to go one more. It's not going to be good for this team, you know. But anyway, honestly, the win felt good. The first game, the offense looked good. I was pretty happy. We were texting and stuff about it. I was pretty happy until I wasn't. But it was, you know. the good news was we got the 7 and we looked good getting there. You know what I mean? And then we got 6 the next day. And then, of course, getting 0 sucks.
But. Yeah, we just pretty much summed it up. And, you know, it's one of those things where I know a lot of people were upset at Kapler. And Eric brought up the only gripe he had was that maybe Whistler could have gone a little bit longer, even though his results weren't good, right? He gave up 2 hits, a walk, and didn't get an out. But the contact wasn't very hard. But it didn't matter. Right after that, Garcia, you know, imploded. Tyler Rogers gave up the leadoff double. That scored 2. And then you have the belt error, which is not the pitcher's fault, right? That could have been a double play, but definitely would have been 1 out. And you just, like you said, Willie, I mean, you have this stupid rule about 3 batters. And so Kapler is kind of hamstrung. All the managers are hamstrung by that requirement. And, you know, sometimes, especially opening day, where you got the nerves and the jitters and the adrenaline going, which is what I chalked up a lot of those pitchers, especially guys like Jose Alvarez in the 10th, where he's a veteran. He's not out there. He's not a newbie, but it's his first, you know, appearance, and he walks, boom, 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 3 guys in a row, 12
that
balls and 16 pitches, right?
Oh, my God, what a way to lose a ball game, right?
But then he comes in the next day or the last game and goes 1-2-3 in the 8th, right? Mm-hmm. Granted, they're losing 4-0. Mm-hmm. But point is that I think a lot of it was just adrenaline and psychological stuff. So I'm not going to pin this one on Kapler, even though his, you know, his former history doesn't really bode well for managing bullpens.
Well, I'm trying to look up here how many pitches Kapler threw, and I'm seeing 0. So, yeah, I'm not going to put it on Kapler.
You know, it's Kapler's fault that Alvarez threw 12 balls. It's like, he's a veteran. It's his 10th year. He's a good pitcher, you know? It happens, right?
Like,
it
honestly, like, he was going to the well, and the well was dry every single time. Like, what do you – like, the biggest decision, I guess, is taking Gausman out. When, you know, he probably could have worked out of that fine, but I don't know what I don't remember what the pitch count was. So
he was at, we talked about that too, and that was at 90 pitches first start of the year. I think he could have gotten the last out, but he wouldn't have pitched into the 8th inning and gone well over 100 pitches. So the 8th inning could have happened no matter what, even if Gausman, you know, pitched that. So it's like, look, Yaz, we'll get to him, but he's 1-for-13 on the year, right? And he's been out there for all 3 games. Are you going to blame Kapler for throwing him out there? Oh, he went he went 0-for-8. Why is Yaz starting again? You got to bench him.
Down to the minors. Oh, my God.
It's the same thing with the pitchers.
They want to put him on the IL already, Yaz. People are out there saying maybe 10 days will give him some time. Dude, we're 3 games.
Because of the hit by pitch? Yeah, come on, man.
Give him a break. We're 3 games into the season. They're getting off days like every other day right now. Let the guy work it out. He just hasn't found a swing yet.
Dude, how many times you know, have we seen a very good hitter start a season very cold? It happens all the freaking time.
Or have a series where he goes 1-for-13. It's one series. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kershaw got tattooed. Is he out of the rotation?
Yeah, he sucks now. He's washed.
He sucks. He's horrible.
I mean, if Yaz goes 1-for-13 in August in a series, we're not going to be screaming to bench him or send him to the IL. We'll be like, all right, whatever. He had a bad series.
Yeah, the overreactions are a little strong.
That's why I can't go on Reddit anymore during a game. I used to go on the game threads. I can't deal with the hot takes there because they're so dumb. It just makes me feel, it's like I want to argue with these people, but I know that I will not win an argument with an idiot, right? So it's for like sure. Just leave it alone. By the way, I want to give credit to Eric. Donnie Barrels is getting the batting title this year. You're correct.
Right?
After one series, that's all I need. That's all I need. He's getting the batting title, all right?
Yeah.
Buster Posey's clearly going to hit 100 home runs. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. These are all realities, for sure.
These are all things that are going to happen.
100%. So one of the interesting things, we talked about this in our season preview, and we knew that the roster was old only because of the legacy contracts. And this is the last year for Belt and Crawford and Posey, and we'll see if they're going to be, any of them are going to be with the team next year. But as of right now, according to Elias Sports Bureau and stats, their opening day roster had an average age of 30 years and 317 days. That is the second oldest roster in the majors. So not saying it has anything to do with the bullpen. I'm just throwing that out there as a point of discussion. I thought that was interesting because you're thinking, oh, the Giants are getting younger. It's like, well, no, not yet.
Well, the younger, the quote unquote younger we're supposed to be getting are all in the minors, right?
Correct.
They, none of them actually made the squad, no matter how good they looked in spring. So,
yeah.
The younger is there. It's just not on the major league field yet.
2021 is not the focus. And that's why it's okay to still have a roster that's 30 years old. Because like you said, not only are the younger in the farm system, they're in the free agents that they're going to go sign after they get Crawford, Belt, Posey off the books, Cueto off the books. I feel like we have to list them all every time we talk about it.
I know.
You know, like, oh, all of these vets, this guy's, you know, like, I think everybody knows that are all they... these old guys.
I just picture this meme of like, you know, it's the Giants airplane and we got parachuters in line and we just got like Posey, Belt, Crawford, Cueto, and they're all lining up. We're like, all right, it's almost time for you to jump. We're almost there. Yeah. All right, go.
Right.
Nudge him land out safely.
Yeah, but
we love you still.
Exactly. Like,
we'll always buy you a beer in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
You're just too old now. It's okay.
But we still love you.
Absolutely. We'll continue to love them. All right, so we brought back a little episode called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So just real quickly, we've already touched on some of these guys. But, man, power from the vets, Longo and Buster, two homers each. They're clearly both going to hit 100 home runs this year.
Yeah.
And like you just said, Donnie Barrels, 7 for 14 on the young season, so he's definitely going to hit 500. But I love this. I mean, this is fantastic. See, who expected Buster hitting two home runs in the first two games? That's crazy. I expected like 5 home runs from him for the season.
Right?
He's going to be at 2.
I thought getting to double digits was going to be, you know, possible. But, geez, like he hasn't been a power hitter for a while. And those looked good, too. I mean, the one to right center, that was impressive, man. I wasn't like some Ohtani-type stuff, but that was – I mean, he looked good, man. He looked real good. So he looks like he's turning on that hit pretty well. The bat speed seems there. So maybe I was wrong about spring training. He was just holding back. He was playing the long con.
Said the same thing before you came on. Said the exact same thing. It's good to see Posey be Posey again, isn't it? I thought 8 home runs would be like pushing it for him this year.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, well, he should have 8 by the All-Star break.
There you go.
He's gonna get 8 in April, dude. I'm telling you.
It was good to see. Yeah, both home runs were you know very impressive. I mean, the first one, it wasn't as far as the distance. It wasn't, you know, it was just to left field and not too far over the fence. It was the fact that the pitch was well inside. It was on the inside corner, and he turned on it. And like you said about his hip, that was healthy to see, right? I was joking. That's where I get jammed and ground out weakly to third. He was able to throw his hands out early and turn his hips. And then the second home run was just beautiful. It was to right center. And you got to have a lot of power. And we know Posey can go opposite. When he was healthy, he drives it for power, just like Longo has. But, it's just really fantastic to see. And Longo carried in the hot spring into the, you know, the season. So we'll see what he does at age 34. But, man, wouldn't that be awesome to see Longo, like, go for 25 or 30 this year and Buster somehow.
Well, he almost had 15. Another one. He got to warning track like a foot away, and it looked like he thought he had it. I guess on the third day, was it Saturday? I guess the weather had changed a little bit. Maybe the wind was blowing in. So maybe he thought that was the same as the opening day ball he hit, and it just didn't go out. So, it looks like he's swinging the bat real confidently. And a lot of guys are. I mean, obviously, when you put a guy in the second hole and then he goes, what was it, 2 for 13 or whatever?
He's 1 for 13 now.
1 for 13? Yeah, that's gonna make your offense sputter. But the fact that we still were able to score 7 and 6, you know, the zero, whatever, sometimes that happens. But, you know, that's a pretty big when a big key piece is slumping that badly. So, yeah, the old guys look good, man.
Yeah, some good. All right, the bad, the bullpen, we already touched on that. But just statistically speaking, 8 walks in 5 2/3. So I know that was all clumped up in the 8th and the 10th inning of game 1. But, whoo, boy, it looks ugly right now. That it's funny when terrible. You sort the bullpen stats for Major League Baseball. And I know this is only 3 or 4 games. It's funny. It's no way this is going to be the trend. But it's funny to see, like, the Giants' bullpen ERA is over 7. But it's actually only like the 6th worst in the major leagues right now because like Texas imploded. Even the LA bullpen isn't very good right now. But the batting average against is actually just over 200. It's because they walked everybody, right? And the couple hits they gave up were all in that 8th inning. Yeah. So it's not like the bullpen is blowing up in terms of contact. It's just location. It's just walking everybody. So their whip is, you know, almost 2 and those kinds of things. So it'll settle down. They already did in game 2, putting up zeros, and they did pretty well yesterday too, or the game 3. It was, I think Moronta was the only one who gave up a run. It was a homer in the late stages of the game. They were already down 3-0. So, yeah, we'll see them you know, settle down. And then of course the ugly, aside from the meltdown in game 1, Yaz goes for one hit in 13 at bats, and he said, quote, "There's no excuse. I just stunk this weekend." So there you go. You heard it from the man himself. What else are you going to say? And, you know, it is interesting to think that maybe the pitch that he got hit by in the hand could have affected him. But at the same time, he was just taking ugly swings, guys. I don't know if that really had too much to do with it.
He's just not there.
Yeah, he looked like he was off balance,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They talked about, I think it was the first or second game that he kept looking breaking ball. And then he kept missing it anyway. Like he was sitting on the breaking ball, and then he was either fouling it off ugly fashion, or he was just striking out on it, you know, just completely whiffing it. So he seemed to have an approach that wasn't working for him. And, you know, that could just be he's a little out of sorts. That could be he got hit by a pitch and it sucks and whatever. And it could, you know what I mean? It could be lots of things. But I feel like at this point, we've seen enough from him to not be worried about one bad series. So.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not going to get too worried about it yet. All right, so let's talk about Giants games this year. They went on sale. Individual tickets have gone on sale. Some are still available, actually. I just checked this morning.
Have a COVID test or a vax, right?
Yep.
To get a ticket. Probably why there are still some available. Because
I thought that was interesting because single game tickets are not available in May at all. It's like they're all sold out and later in the year. But they're still available in April. And I think that has something to do with it, but I could be wrong about that. But yes, indeed, vaccinations or a negative COVID test will be required to attend games at least in the meantime. So what that means is your vaccination has to be at least 2 weeks active. So like, for example, I'm getting my second shot on April 15th. I can't immediately go to a Giants game. I have to wait 2 weeks until that vaccination card is considered good, right? So I'd have to wait till April 29th or so. Or you have to have a negative COVID test within the last 72 hours. So you got to have one within 3 days of attending your first game in a home series. And then children under 12 or 12 and under do not need any of those things. So, you know, it's like my kids were going, hey, you know, Dad, can we go to a Giants game? But it's like, well, crap, I don't want to have to deal with, because the only tickets that are available are in April. And so that would mean, even though my wife and I will be vaccinated with our second shots, we won't be good until like April 29th and April 30th or May 1st for her. And then the kids, well, Noah's okay, our son, because he's 11. But our teenage daughter isn't quite old enough to get the shot. She's 15. So she would have to get a negative COVID test. Me and my wife would have to get a negative COVID test, even though we'd just be a few days short. It's just like one of those annoying things. I'm glad they're doing it. I am. But I could see how it scares people off. It's like, well, crap, I don't want to get a, you know, sign up and go wait in line and hope my results are ready in time. And, oh, yeah.
I mean, we could be Texas and just be like, full capacity. Let's go, baby. Woo!
I know, right?
So. Well, I mean, you got to think that the vaccination rollout, you know, the timing of it is why tickets are sold out for May, June, July, things like that. I mean, I know I myself, when we get off this call, I'm actually going to look into scheduling my first one because today is the day in Nevada that it opened up for my bracket, or I think everybody, because, you know, I'm low on the list. So I wonder if
I've been dealing with it since we opened up on Monday last week, and it's like I could drive 150 miles and get a shot, but if I'm trying to get one in Austin, it's like I'm checking at like 7 a.m and it's like
that's what I'm worried about. It's unavailable. What I'm worried about here, and I haven't looked into it enough. I woke up late today, but you know, I wonder if other ballparks are doing this as well. I really haven't looked into it. You know, you joke about Texas. There's no way Texas is requiring, you know, you to come in with a negative COVID test. But you got to wonder, are places like Kansas City asking them to do that? You know, or is it just because it's California and it's under their rules and regulations?
Even in California, the Dodgers, the Padres, and the A's and the Angels, they are not requiring the COVID test and vaccinations. It's unique to the Giants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like the A's this weekend, they had their opening series. That was not required. And it was a point of discussion here in the Bay Area because it's like they're right across from the Bay from one another, but one's requiring it, one isn't. It's just what the Giants are doing. They're just deciding to be more diligent about it and safer about it, which is fine. You and I had this discussion, you know, a couple of times, Eric, where I've been very serious about this. I am always, you know, distancing and wearing my mask and doing all these things. So I'm hypersensitive to it, hyper-focused, hyper-careful. But even I would feel safe being outdoors at a stadium with a mask on, being more than 6 feet away from my next patron without having vaccination proof or COVID negative test proof. So for me, the Giants are going the extra step, but I can understand from a fan's perspective, like what I just said 2 minutes ago. Crap, that's annoying. That's a lot of stuff to get to do for the game.
I mean, look, COVID makes a lot of things annoying, man. And the thing is, it's like I could choose to be like mad at the Giants, or I could choose to be mad because we're in a situation and they're choosing to play it a little safer than other people. Yeah. So, you know,
so we got it's like, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's like, I feel like a lot of people are getting mad at the wrong, the COVID stuff, a lot of people are getting mad at it. They're directing their anger in the wrong direction. It's like, yes, it's annoying. It's annoying. It's all annoying. Getting COVID and dying is annoying. It sucks. Like, it all sucks. We all think it sucks. Nobody's happy about it.
We have a comment here wondering if everyone is COVID free, why do people have to wear masks and social distance? And the same person said Giants have become political. Look, we don't like to become political on the show, but I'm going to say I completely 100% disagree with that take. They are not being political. And I'm sorry, but you're being obtuse about that. The Giants are not being political. This is not a liberal versus conservative, Democrat versus Republican thing. And I'm tired of that take. I'm tired of it. This is about safety.
It's a health
crisis,
man. It's a health crisis.
It's a freaking health crisis.
A political situation.
How does this help them politically?
This isn't like voter rights or like, you know what I mean?
COVID-19 doesn't care. It doesn't care.
No, it doesn't care.
And every variant that switches, it doesn't say like, oh, I'm going to spawn off and I'll be the Republican.
We've got a new liberal strand of COVID.
Right. That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
I mean, scientifically, we can have the discussion of, is this too much?
Yeah, is
you
it
know
too
what?
Careful?
I think I think there's debate there for that. But it's okay to be too safe. It's like, do I need to always wear a seatbelt driving down the freeway? Well, no, I'm not necessarily going to get an accident, but it's a good safety measure to have in case I do. Well, it's the same thing. That's all the Giants are doing. Is it going to prevent COVID? Well, it's going to do more. It may not prevent actual COVID transmission, especially with cases getting lower and lower by the day. But it's okay. They have the right to do this. And in no way is this I'm sorry, it's not political. They're just being extra safe. And
they're trying to be
again,
a good neighbor. Yeah. That's what the Giants are doing. They're trying not to unleash COVID across their city. They're trying to make the gathering place a safe place so that people don't have to worry about it in any way, shape, or form. And it's annoying.
You can just come and enjoy a baseball game, right, if you're there.
Right.
So.
You know, it's annoying, but it's like you said, Willie, it's all annoying.
Yep.
And by the way, the same person says, if everyone is COVID free, well, I'm going to stop you right there. Not everyone is COVID free. That's clearly not the case. So I don't know why you think.
And even if you tested 3 days ago COVID free, that doesn't mean within to 72 hours that you didn't pick it up. This is very reminiscent of the conversation that we had in the MGA, the Mediocre Golf Association thing that I run with my buddy, where we decided not to hold our world championships. And it was like, well, we probably could find a way to do it if we had everybody like show up and get tested when they showed up and do all this stuff. And there'd be a lot of cost to it, but we could still do it. But at the end of the day, we just both looked at each other and said, like, if somebody comes, gets sick, and then goes home and takes it to their family, can we live with ourselves knowing that we allowed that to occur? And if you're the Giants organization, like, you have to have that conversation, right? So it's, you know, it's, that's the conversation, not I voted for this guy and you voted for that guy, therefore we disagree about COVID. Like, I don't understand how that narrative got started, but it's silly. It's really sad.
I still don't get it, but that's okay. The Giants are being.
We can talk about why. That's a completely different. We'll be political.
I have a hint of why.
But we'll. Yeah. You can listen to other podcasts for that answer. Right.
You can listen to our Heart Edition podcast. We definitely get political on that.
All about that. Yeah.
Yeah, at Heart Edition Pod on Twitter. We'll talk about it in a second. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's move on. Let's talk about around the league, some notable performances and interesting things around the league. Shohei Ohtani becomes the first player to pitch and bat second since 1903. So that was pretty cool. And he now owns the fastest pitch and the hardest hit ball in the majors in our very short four-game season so far.
He did that all within a span of an inning, right?
Yeah, and he did it all in an inning, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He threw that pitch in the first inning. It was like 101 point something, and then hit a ball 115 miles an hour into the stand. So,
and then he left the game with general soreness after like a horrible misplay by the Angels defense. It's like, this guy can't stay on the field, man, and we all want to watch him play. I think he's okay from what I've heard, but it's just like, God, can we get to watch this guy? Please, can we all just get to watch him? Like, RNGesus out there, like the baseball injuries. Stop taking Shohei Ohtani off the field.
It was cool to see, you know, because he's every time he's pitched, he doesn't hit previously. So this was the first game in which he hit and pitched in the same game. So we had a friend again from another podcast that Willie and I do that isn't much of a baseball fan, but of course in. Heart Edition has become a baseball podcast. We keep joking.
It's a baseball podcast.
So he's actually starting to watch some baseball, and he's texting us all last night. He's all, oh, this Angels guy just ripped it out. Oh, this Angels guy. And I was like, dude, it's the same guy. He's pitching and hitting. Oh, that's cool. We're like, no, it's really rare.
It's crazy.
Like, this is like a really rare thing. So that was pretty funny. Yeah, I was a casual confused. Fan watching.
Did he think that, like, this is just how baseball works? Like, everybody plays both sides, right? Your shortstop hits. So the pitcher hits too, right? It's like, wow. I was like trying to make a comparison that would work, and I used it's like the star quarterback is also your star cornerback, but I don't know if that's really true here. It's like I'm trying to figure out what the, cuz you know, it's like a pitcher doesn't hit because it's so specialized. I guess it would be like your kicker being your quarter. I don't know. It's hard to figure out what that one-to-one comparison is. Cuz you know, it's just how specialized pitching really is. How much time and effort you have to put in, and how much it takes out of your body too. It makes a huge difference.
I think the most amazing thing is that, you know, playing high school ball and just seeing this everywhere, just seeing other players who've come, especially the most athletic players, you know, like your shortstops and center fielders, and even a lot of your catchers, a lot of them were pitchers, right? And shortstops in high school. And a lot of them just hit bombs all day, right? They were the best hitters in their league. And it's so funny to see these guys who dominated in high school, some of them even in college in terms of hitting. But then when they become specialized pitchers in the major leagues, it's like all those reps go away. Mm-hmm. And then they become crappy hitters. And it's the strangest thing to me because you think, like, you have your exceptions like Madison Bumgarner and a couple others like that. But it shows you how you really do need to keep up those reps over years. You can't just drop them for 2 or 3 years in the minors and then concentrate on pitching and then hope to pick up that bat and pick up where you left off in college or high school.
It's also just how difficult hitting in the major leagues is. It shows you know, it's like that needs to be a huge focus for you to be able to do it. Like, that's why we're the only sport, baseball's the only sport where you got to toil in the minors. Like, you know, you're 19 years old coming out of college. They're like, all right, you're in the pros, buddy. I mean, I guess they have their G League, but just whatever. you know, it's like essentially you just go straight in, and it's like, yeah, so, you know, got to learn some intricacies, but baseball, you got to learn how to hit a curveball, a changeup, a fastball, a sinker, a slider. It ain't easy, man.
And then Mercedes from the White Sox started off the year 8-for-8. That was pretty cool to see. And so he's now the first player in the modern era dating back to 1900 to begin a season going 8-for-8.
That way, you know, what's funny is this is all the same series, because the White Sox and Angels just played a 4-game series, and this Yermin Mercedes guy, like, that was the big matchup in last night's game, was Ohtani pitching to Mercedes. Can he get this guy out finally? And I think he did twice. I know he struck him out one time, but like, I'd never heard of Yermin Mercedes, and you have to wonder if Eloy Jimenez hadn't gotten injured for the White Sox, if we would have ever heard of Yermin Mercedes. But apparently 76-year-old Tony La Russa knows what buttons to push for his hitters, because I still can't believe that guy's managing the White Sox, Tony La Russa.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I don't know. He needs to go get another DUI.
76 years old.
I know.
I mean, back in the day, the managers managed until they died. So, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
I think you think about these old guys, you're like, yeah, they were old. Jesus. Nowadays, it's like, you got to be able to jog out to the mound at least.
Dude, I love, oh my God, why am I blanking out his name? Holy crap. You know, Tigers manager. Oh, Jim Leland. He just be smoking in the dugout, even like in the 2000s with the Marlins, right?
Yeah.
He's just sitting there at the end of the dugout, just like, that's what I want to see. I want to see more of that. A lot of cursing and smoking in the dugout. Maybe a little flask too. Just to mix it
I think I'm ready for the player manager to come back.
Yeah,
give me the player manager back.
that was a sweet man back in
the
day.
I'm putting myself in.
Yeah, Pete Rose, and you got Frank Robinson. You got others. Yeah, man, I want to see that again. Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Cool.
Baseball has some
Buster,
weird stuff.
Buster's one of those guys who can.
Yeah,
do that.
Buster, player manager. Let's go.
Yeah, Kapler gets fired midseason, replaced by Buster Posey. And then Buster agrees to trade himself. And
well, I was going to say.
Buster gets cold, but his trade value is high. I trade myself.
That'd be great. Oh, man. Okay, and then Houston. Okay, Eric and I last week. Yeah, Houston's going to get the wild card, but Oakland's going to take the West. Well, boy, those took serious dent in the first weekend of the season.
Oakland, I said the Angels were in the West. I said.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said the Angels. Okay. All right. My bad.
I also had Oakland, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you did, Will. I'm looking.
Maybe it was you, Willie. Yeah, I didn't look at it. I was just going off memory. But, okay, two of us had Oakland, and those took a nice dent. They're already four games into the season.
Yeah. 0-4. Oh, man. You know, I was so annoyed yesterday that Ty, because we had our MGA golf tournament, and Ty was like, going to go watch baseball. And I was like, I'm going to go, I don't know, watch Netflix. Right. I was like, screw you, dude.
I finally finished watching The Flight Attendant on HBO Max yesterday because the Giants were on.
Yeah. It was so weird. I'm like, it's Sunday. Why? It's Monday's the no baseball day, not Sunday.
I think this is the only Sunday, right, aside from rainouts, that we're going to have this. This is like, it's the weirdest day to not have
this. It's the only time I can ever remember it happening. Chad and I were talking a little bit pre-show, and I wonder, because there was three series between teams from the National and the American League and playing each other, and each of those series was only three games, but like, they weren't off on Sunday in Milwaukee, but they were in Miami and Seattle for some freaking reason. Like, maybe they... Maybe they gave them a choice which day they wanted off, Friday or Sunday. You know,
right. Some of the interleague series, they're not going to go four games, right? They're going to go three, and they're like, which day do you want off? I don't know. Sunday? Sure. Easter, whatever.
It was Easter. I just don't think about Easter ever. It's just not, it's not on my radar of like a holiday I care about. So
this is very, very odd. All right, so coming up, the Giants start with three in San Diego tonight. In the order for the Giants, we have DeSclafani, Sanchez, and then Gausman. And that last one's going to be fun because that's against Blake Snell, so we'll see how that goes. And then they're going to open up 2 days after that on Friday against Colorado and have a three-game weekend series. So that's what's going to be on tap before we're back sometime next week. What are you guys looking forward to most about this San Diego series. One thing that we forgot to mention at the top of the show is the fact that, okay, the Giants are 1-2, whatever, it's the first series of the year. But just as predicted, the Padres and Dodgers are already off to a rip-roaring start at 3-1.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I want to watch Tatis hit. I hope he doesn't crush us, but I enjoy watching the guy. I hope Machado doesn't do anything. And, I hope our old guys keep their bats alive. But, you know, I'm expecting us to get shelled in at least one of these games. Hopefully none of them, but probably one, possibly all three. But I don't know. It's going to be hot. It's gonna be
possibly all three.
I really hope it's not tonight's game, because tonight they face Morion, and then tomorrow they face Darvish. So I'd rather that they don't get blown out in a Darvish or Snell game, and maybe they could win one of those. You know, it's funny. We talked about it. They're 1-2, and they play well against lefties and not against righties. Well, if that bears out, they should hit Morion and Snell and lose to Darvish. So, you know, maybe okay, they can somehow squeeze out 2-1 this series, because they do match up better. This is exactly why the lineup is constructed, how it's constructed for these kind of series right here, is to have, you know, we're facing left-handed starting pitching within the division, which is exactly what Farhan built for. So I'm looking forward to just the whole series. Like, I want to see if Hosmer, too, can keep it up. The guy's batting 636 through three games. Granted, that's three games. But he's 7-11. You know, I thought Donnie Barrels at 7-14 was pretty damn good.
He's so I'm looking at the against for the starters. Hosmer only batting 205 at-bats, so 1-5 against Desclafani. So there you go. He's going to get him out. I'm telling
you. That's
good.
I like that.
Yeah. Actually, nobody really lights him up so far. Never mind. Tatis, 1-2 with a home run. It's always funny when you see these stats, like 1-2 with a home run. It's like suddenly it's 2-3 with two home runs. You're like, okay. You know, ownage is ownage, as Kuiper loves to say.
Ownage is ownage. No doubt. All right, so good crap coming up. So that's going to do it for episode 218 of, or is this 219? This is 219. Yeah, 219 of the TorchCast. Nice. You can follow us collectively at TorchCast. Like us on Facebook, where we'll be streaming most of our, if not all of our episodes right here on Facebook Live. You can follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, at 2OutHits with the number 2 for Eric, and at WillyDills for Willie Dills Gregory. You can also check out our new podcast that I do with Willie and two other guys over at Hard Edition Pod. We record generally every Tuesday night, so it's usually up sometime every Wednesday. Eric, you got anything going on?
Yeah, I'll again pimp Giants Chatter, the Facebook group. We're doing a live preview of the Padres series in like an hour. And also, I will be a guest on the Splash Hits podcast, the UK Giants podcast. We're recording tomorrow. So I'm assuming because it's tomorrow night for them, it'll go up Wednesday morning. So I'll make sure to tweet out that link and share that.
Do you drink
tea
and eat crumpets or something during that one?
I'm going to stick to my coffee and maybe I should
talk with a Cockney accent, you know.
Oh man, I can't try. I was in a play in high school and I had to talk in one of those accents and I stunk.
In the United Kingdom, everybody has to bat from the left side.
That's pretty good. I like that. I might steal that.
Yeah, go for it, man. That's all you.
All right, Willie, I know I mentioned the show, but you got a lot of other things going on right now.
Mostly the show. Also, if you are interested in golf, the Mediocre Golf Association season has officially begun pretty much all of our locations. The Austin location looks to be growing a little bit, so if somebody lives in Austin, Texas, and they want to join, mjtour.com is how you can find out more info if there's a chapter in your area. And, it's really good to have that back. Shout out to the Reds and Cardinals for brawling and making baseball feel like it's really back.
Castellanos, man.
Standing over the pitcher.
Good old-fashioned, like, we brawl, and then all of a sudden another brawl randomly, you know, sparks up in the between the bullpen. It's like, yes, baseball. That TV/WillyDills, where you can find me streaming Hearthstone. But I'm not streaming it until they fix a card, but apparently they're going to. The game is a complete, utter disaster right now.
Oh, I haven't been hearing things about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so stupid. And I'll talk about it whenever I actually stream. I might talk about it tomorrow on Hard Edition, because that's a place where we will talk about video games. But
Right.
I have a lot of it's basically a rant. It'll be a rant. So look forward to that tomorrow. Yeah.
Hey, and by the way, I don't mean to toot your horn for you, but didn't you win the MGA tournament, the Rebel Am-Am, this weekend?
I did. I won the tournament yesterday. Yeah, me and Ty were teamed up, so we won the team portion of it, but I also won the individual. I had to go to a playoff. and we played one hole. I hit my drive just right of a bunker, but really far. So I was only like 90 yards out from the green. I landed on the green. I looked over. I wasn't paying attention to what the other guy was doing because he was on the other side of the fairway. I looked over and he was like down in a ditch, and then he pitched it over the green, and then he duffed it short. And I was like, all right, MGA, baby. All you got to do is make – I made a five and I won, which is, you know, that's how you do it in the MGA.
Hey, man, you know, sometimes –
why is the MGA, right?
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. Sometimes a pitcher can get a win in relief giving up three runs, right? It happens.
Exactly. So. Yeah, totally. Yep. Yeah.
It's all good. All right, everyone. Hey, thanks for tuning in again. We're really enjoying this live streaming content. Keeps us regular as well. Speaking of being irregular, next week we're going to have to figure out another time. Like I said at the top of the show, I'm going to be diving all day Monday. So we'll figure it out and we'll put it out on our social media. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us for episode 219. We'll see you sometime next week for 220. Until then, go Giants. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.